We're at 80 degrees at 11:59 and 40 seconds. And this is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. On the show today, Kathy Mattea, who is a well-known country indie music star, won a couple of Grammys and a lot of country music awards. She is going to be appearing at the University of Illinois Research Park this Friday evening, tomorrow night at 7:30. And her opening act is Ryan Groff, who's lead singer of the band Elsinore, also does a lot of stuff on his own. He is in the studio with us today to perform live, and we'll do it in the reverse order. Ryan coming up very shortly, and a conversation with Kathy Mattea in the second part of the show. Hope that you will stay with us for Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. That was a band called Elsinore, which is a group that I've heard of for years, but never had the chance to actually go hear myself. And I think we're running into something else. There must be more than one thing on that disc. Oh, that was the end. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. My guest is Ryan Groff, who is, are you considered the lead singer of Elsinore? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, the lead singer, the primary songwriter. Founding member.
The founding member.
A founding member.
And what was the name of that tune?
That was a new song called Breathing Light. That's actually the radio debut of that. It hasn't even, we haven't finished mastering the album yet, but I thought I would bring that today because that was most fitting for the show, I think.
Well, we're happy to debut things on this show.
Yeah.
And you're here today because tomorrow evening you are opening for Kathy Mattea at the concert series called Outside at the Research Park, co-sponsored by Krannert Center and Fox Atkins Group. Kathy Mattea starts at 7:30. You start at 6:30.
Right.
And the weather forecast is hot but clear.
Right.
So all should go well for this concert. And we'll be talking with Kathy later on this half hour, actually. Mm-hmm. Had a nice conversation with her a few weeks ago. And we're very pleased that you brought your guitar and your vocal cords in to do some live singing for us. Tell for those of us like me who don't know much about the band or about you other than having been able to discover some clips online, what was the genesis for Elsinore and where's the name come from?
I guess we'll start with the name question. That gets asked of us a lot, either because of the movie Strange Brew, the Rick Moranis movie from the 80s, which was... and I actually haven't seen it. I've just seen clips since forming the band. Elsinore was the hot topic of discussion in that movie because it was the name of the brewery, the product beer of the movie, apparently. So we get asked if that's it a lot, which we always say no because we haven't even seen that movie. The name indirectly came from Hamlet, because that was where Shakespeare chose to set the story in Elsinore, which is in Denmark, I saw the name somewhere and decided to put it into a song because I knew that it sounded like some faraway place. You know, I was probably 21, and I decided, you know, this sounds like something I want to put into
Brigadoon,
a song.
Brigadoon, Elsinore,
yes.
Camelot.
Camelot. That's a good simile. But yeah, I was just starting to write songs when I was in college, studying music, and Elsinore just had this ring to it that really kind of stood out. So it was one of those things, sort of like the band name Wilco. It felt like it wasn't being too descriptive or too pretentious or too anything. It just felt like it was right. And it's felt good because I find people always say, wait, say that name again? You know, something like as if they haven't heard that before so that they like the sound of it. You know, it always gets a really positive reaction. So
well, there also might be a ring to it, too, where if you've ever read Hamlet, it's in the back of your mind.
I mean, I read
Hamlet a couple of times, but it's a long time ago,
right.
So it's there.
Some
it
kind of apparition,
something.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But then the genesis of the band, I guess the best way to explain it is that this is my fifth year in Champaign-Urbana. Moved up here right after graduating. We started the band. It was just a college band, very, very part-time. And then I moved up here, and then the other members followed. And we'd played some shows up here in college and felt like stretching our wings a little bit more and not just being a college band who'd had a go of it, you know, for a couple of years and then everyone split. We liked what we were doing, and we were progressing every month, every year. And then my songwriting started feeling better and better all the time, so I just started working hard towards being more full-time and more full-time. So you started teaching guitar lessons, started just integrating me and the rest of the band into the music scene, and we've had a really good response from the community, from the fellow musicians in town, from show promoters, from clubs, radio stations, newspapers. Everyone has been really, really nice to us. So we call it home. I got married, bought a house here, and we feel really good about being in Champaign-Urbana.
And enough of you obviously are sticking around because that's the thing that happens with college bands is everybody goes away and then you don't have the band anymore.
Yeah. So Champaign is it's got its hooks into us, I think.
Apparently so.
Yeah,
it does that. It does that to a lot of us,
whether we
mean it for it to or not.
It does.
Well, you're here to do a little solo singing.
Yeah.
Why don't we start with something?
I think that's the best way to promote anything when you're a musician is just to put it out there and show you what's
that's
happening.
Right. If people like it, they will go hear you.
Mm-hmm. This song that I'll play first is it's on my solo record that came out on Parasol Records 2 years ago called People in the Midwest, and will also be on the new Elsinore record, which is called Yes, 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 which will come out this fall or winter. This song is about living in the Midwest and being perfectly happy being here. It's called Landlocked.
Mm-hmm. If happiness is what you have to be direct and blunt. It's the only way of getting anywhere. The moving parts inside your brain will seize up and rust from rain. It's a systematic degradation from lack of use. Involuntary climate change will bring about acid rain, and we'll all be wearing umbrella hats in 20 years or so. People in the Midwest have giant hearts inside their chests. Landlocked by cash crops.
Congratulations! I think you're the first whistler we've had on this program.
Good.
I was not expecting that. I was actually peeking through your disc here, mm-hmm. called "People in the Midwest," from which you took that song called "Landlocked." Mm-hmm. This is Ryan Groff playing and singing here live in Studio F on Live and Local on FM 90.9. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
You said when you started out that you were in music school at the University mm-hmm. of Illinois?
Actually, at Eastern Illinois University.
At Eastern?
Yeah.
And what were you studying in music there?
I started off as a vocal performance major, and I really appreciated the foundational technique that I was being taught, but it was the repertoire became a problem for me. I didn't like singing only classical music all the time, and being given a hard time for being a singer-songwriter or the singer of a rock and roll band, as a lot of my teachers were really concerned about, because they'd seen people be in rock bands and come in and want to take voice lessons and not take it seriously and hurt their voice. And so I was striving to prove them wrong, as an 18, 19, 20-year-old, and to not only take away what they were giving me in my lessons, but to sort of rise above that plateau and to be a pop singer, a rock singer, a folk singer, and use the techniques that I was being taught, you know, singing Brahms and Beethoven and singing, you know, all this big classical music and taking that with me.
Well, you're certainly using them in interesting ways that I'm sure your teachers didn't expect.
Yes, yeah.
And I was enjoying just watching you sing and also whistle because, you know, you've got this wonderfully infectious smile that keeps showing up while you're singing. It makes it look like I'm really enjoying making this really cool sound with my voice.
Yeah. Well, it's helped. It's been really helpful with me being a full-time musician. I have a very supportive wife, a very supportive family, a hardworking group of guys that I'm in the band with. So I don't have much to be too upset about these days, you know, and especially after the presidential election season. I don't know that I have too much anxiety about the world, at least in my small bubble. You know, there's always other things to worry about. But as far as career and life and artistic license and freedom, I feel pretty good right now.
Well, not everybody can say that. So,
and that's and I know that.
Double congratulations!
Thank you.
All around. Let me mention because I am supposed to, and because these things are important, that WILS programs today are made possible by the University of Illinois School of Music, presenting the Allerton Music Barn Festival, September 3rd through 7th at Allerton Park. More information is at www.allertonmusicbarn.com. And that's another performance, a series of performance events that we'll be covering on this show as that time approaches. So that'll be a lot of fun, too. There's a tremendous lineup of music going on. And Ryan, you're singing tomorrow to lead off for Kathy Matea starting at 6:30 at the Research Park, which is on First Street on campus, just south of campus, really. I guess it's still kind of part of campus.
Yeah.
Kathy starts at 7:30. You start at 6:30. Any idea how you got tapped for this? I mean, that seems like a pretty good honor to lead off for her.
It honestly came just kind of snuck up on me. My good friend and local musician and show promoter Mike Ingram, he always has his ears open for show opportunities, and he said, you know, I did this Research Park show last year, and I got an email asking if you would want to play this show. And I said, well, yeah, it sounds good. He said, yeah, you'll be opening for this it's like a famous folk singer, and I didn't recognize the name, but I think it sounds like a pretty cool opportunity. There were a lot of people there last year, and I said, well, let's do it. You know, I mean, it's something I haven't done before, and anything with the university involving new people, I can't say no, usually. You know, I try to do as much as I can as far as, really getting my feet wet across town, it just sounded like something that would be great to do, and then all of a sudden I get emails from people saying, you know, Kathy Matea, she's like one of my favorite folk singers. You know, she's fantastic. I'm so happy that you're opening. It's going to be a good night all the way from top to bottom.
So you hadn't heard of her before either?
No.
Well, I feel better because when they asked me to do the interview with her, I had not heard of her. I said, you know, can you send me some information? Mm-hmm. They said, well, what? You don't know? Haven't heard of Kathy Matea? She's won Grammy Awards and all this stuff. So I've been running around asking people, have you heard of Kathy Matea? Yes, a lot of people have, and some haven't.
Yeah.
And so I went out and got some albums and listened, and I really enjoyed it, particularly the new one, which we'll be talking about in our conversation.
That's good, yeah, that's good.
And I guess she's mostly billed as a country singer, also kind of an indie pop, and so I'm sure a lot of people will show up to see her. But from what I am reading about you, a lot of people are going to show up specifically to see you.
Well, I hope so. And think maybe that was part of the ploy to get people out. I guess, you know, that hardworking local musician opens for hardworking nationally touring musician.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and this is Live and Local, so we're pleased to have people who will be performing live locally. And you are local, also performing locally.
Right.
So let's tease some people who are listening with another song to get them to come out and hear you tomorrow night.
Okay. This is one that will also be on the new Elsinore record. This was inspired by a very, very interesting character. If you frequent downtown Champaign, any of you listening out there, there was a woman up until about a year ago who was dubbed the $2 lady in downtown Champaign. And she was the plague of downtown businesses because she would stand outside and be begging for $2, $2, $2 all the time. Her name was Margaret. And she really frustrated a lot of downtown business owners. And I just always kind of laughed because I would talk to her and you could have a conversation with her. And then one day she asked me for a ride home. And I thought, wait, I thought you were homeless, you know? And it was just such a strange day. And I gave her a ride home and we had a conversation. And I'm like, this woman she just is a street beggar and wants cigarettes and $2. And everyone thinks that she, you know, does she have a drug problem? Or is she, you know, what's her deal? Is this homeless woman's really, really messing up downtown? And she's just this sweet woman. And it was such a strange, like, comic book character. That's really what she was. She just had such a strange kind of, you know, aura around her. So I decided to make a song loosely based on Margaret, the $2 lady, and it's called Chemicals. And it's also just a commentary on the way that our brains work and don't work together. So here it is.
All right, Ryan Groff on Live and Local.
You've got some agenda with long-term deadlines that you keep to no matter what you do. About you all the time. I think I've got you figured out with the chemicals inside your head. Hey, love, I've got you on my back. I'm thinking of the something to be reckoned with. Oh, hey, love, do you have $2, love? Oh, 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 oh. I've got something in between being polite and but you're old, you're out in the cold with a runny nose. You think about me all the time. You think you've got me figured out with the chemicals inside your head. You on my back, I'm thinking of the chemicals as something to be reckoned with. Oh, hey, love, do you have $2, love? Well, do you love? And that's what she said. Do probably see you in the morning and fight you off at night. The trouble with the plans you're making is that they're not quite right. Thank you.
Ryan Groff on FM 90.9. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. That was beautiful. That was a wonderful song, but particularly prefaced by the story you told about Margaret in downtown Champaign. So is she still around?
I think she's still in central Illinois, but she hasn't been around downtown
for
a while.
She's moved on.
Yeah, I think she has.
Well, we're going to have to move on. Unfortunately, I'd love to have another whole bunch of songs. We'll have to have you back on the show.
Absolutely. As soon as possible. Definitely.
Yeah, and talk about specifically some of the gigs that you might have coming up. I know you're playing with Elsinore and on your own at the Downtown Champaign Festival on the 22nd.
Yeah, Cowboy Monkey. Yeah, Elsinore and I.
And then the Pygmalion Music Festival.
Yeah,
Urbana mostly. Right,
Canopy Club, and then there's also a special show, a day show that'll be announced later that I'll play solo. So that's going to be a huge festival again this year.
Okay, so Google Elsinore, Google Ryan Groff, you will come up with quite a lot of hits, and you can sample some more tunes and see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you, Kevin.
Much.
Thank you.
Ryan Groff on Live and Local. Coming up, Kathy Mattea. I'm Kevin Kelly.
Oh, the green rolling hills of West Virginia are the nearest thing to heaven that I know. Though the times are sad and drear and I cannot linger here, they'll keep me and never let me go. My daddy said, don't ever. Though the times are sad and drear and I cannot linger here, they'll keep me and never let me go. Though the times are sad and drear and I cannot linger here, they'll keep me and never let me go.
Called Green Rolling Hills from Kathy Mattea's album called Coal. It's her most recent one, and you'll be hearing some of that. If you go hear her at the Research Park, University of Illinois campus, tomorrow evening at 7:30, Ryan Groff leading at 6:30. And this is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. I had a chance to talk with Kathy Mattea a few weeks ago. We had a really, I thought, wonderful conversation. We'll share all of that with you right now. Kathy Mattea has won a couple of Grammy Awards, a fistful of awards from the Country Music Association, and much more. I want to start with a question that I usually ask people, partly to be just as a lark, to give them a sound check. But I'm not sure I've talked with somebody whose life has been quite so public as yours has. And so I'm curious, for the sake of anybody who is either discovering you new or knows you just from your songs and not much else, what would be the 5-minute version of your life story?
Minute version of my life story. Born in West Virginia, baby of the family, 2.5 kids, skipped a grade in school. I was the whiz kid of my family and my community. I got really involved with music in school and in every extracurricular activity I could think of. My dogs are barking at the siren going up the street. They'll be singing here in a minute. Went away to college, studied physics and chemistry and engineering, played music in all my spare time, moved to Nashville with a member of a bluegrass group we had founded. He left less than a year later. 30 years later, I'm still here. and have been grateful that I found what I love to do early in life and had the guts to go off the beaten path and pursue it.
Well, that was going to be my next question, which again could have a, super obvious answer, but in particularly in light of what you decided to do in college, which could have taken you any of a number of different complicated directions, why sing?
Because it was the most fun thing I had experienced. And I could do math and science in my sleep, but I felt somehow more alive or more like myself when I was doing music. And so a couple of things happened. One was that my friend Mickey decided to move to Nashville. He was graduating, and he invited me. He said, you can come with me if you want.
This is graduating college.
He was graduating college, and I was at the end of my sophomore year. And I thought, you know, if I could make it work, it would be a much more interesting life, I think. The other thing was that because I had skipped a grade in school, I was the youngest person in my class. So I had this extra year to sort of play with. And if it didn't work out and I came back to school, I would just be the same age as everybody I was in school with. So I kind of felt like I didn't have it. I had everything to gain and nothing to lose.
And it seems actually sort of rare that somebody who is involved in music, maybe it's not so rare, finds those sciences, as you mentioned, so easy. You could do them in your sleep. I mean, the physics, chemistry, and engineering scare the pants off of me.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm married to this man who is a songwriter, and I mean he is a songwriter. If he doesn't write songs, he's miserable. And he grew up in his dad's machine shop, and he would write songs all the time he was on the machine. And it's an interesting thing to me to see people who integrate their left and right brains. I have a friend who's a great accountant, went to take a painting class a few years ago and found herself. She still does accounting for people, but the way she uses both, she's creative with it. And I have a brother who's the same way, runs his own business, but part of why he's successful is that he finds creative solutions to problems. And I think that sometimes it's so easy to think of yourself as living on one side or the other of your brain, instead of sort of using both together. And it's very fulfilling. It's really fun to be able to meet a challenge by solving a problem, but also sort of sit back and wait for creative inspiration.
So what do you think you do with that part of your brain now?
The right brain?
Yeah, the physics, chemistry, engineering part. Have you left it entirely behind, or does it sneak out now and then?
Well, you know, when you go into this, you're self-employed and you run a small business, you know, so I've got that part of the challenge. Also, I've been doing more writing and teaching and some speaking lately, so there's a lot of writing involved, which is technical and creative at the same time. And I will say that I do play with a lot of those ideas from my science background, although I do it in a different way. I don't have a lot of patience for the minutia of it. But there are certain books that I've read where I really like playing with the idea of how quantum physics sort of articulates a spiritual principle, and I won't even go down that rabbit hole with you. But, you know, the other thing I will say is that I think that a lot of creative stuff has that balance in that, you know, you have to learn scales. You have to learn the technical side of your instrument in order to get it under your belt enough that you can sort of use that to articulate the right side of your brain and be creative with it and bring melody through. You can mechanically play something that makes somebody feel nothing. It's learning to use both at the same time that really brings the soul into what you do.
Well, and listening to the albums of yours that I have, which is not very many because I'm pretty new to your music, and I've enjoyed it a lot, and I love the sound of your voice, but I particularly like the soul that's behind it.
Well, thank you.
It seems to me that maybe you combine that intellect partly in the choice of your songs, because they're anything but vacuous, which, you know, a lot of songs can be. But there's that soul that you talked about. I actually really like that phrase that you wanted to leave behind, the quantum physics articulates a spiritual principle. Can you elaborate that a little bit?
Oh, Lord. I don't know if I can go down this rabbit hole. But basically, it's the idea that light is both a wave and a particle, and it does not have a specific location until you look at it, until you nail it down, and then it becomes a particle and has a location. But until then, it's pure potential, and that's sort of how we are. You know, we have all this potential, and in a lot of ways, what we see in the world is what we look for. We create a lot of our own experience, and so those two principles are sort of saying the same thing to me. That's kind of the thumbnail sketch of it.
And how do you think your career, from your early albums to what you're doing now, what you have done now with Cole and with some of the activism and the teaching that you mentioned, how do you think maybe that has been, where does that fall on that spiritual trajectory?
Well, I think that it's very, this is what, when I teach young people who are young musicians coming up or people trying to find their way, you know, part of what I sort of feel is missing in our culture is this you know, when I was young, there was this voice in me that kept saying, you know, this music thing, there's more to it. There's more to this music thing. But I was raised by parents who were depression kids. So they, you know, they really pushed me to, and I could understand it, you know, to get something concrete, get an education, follow a secure track. But I kept hearing this little voice inside, and I think a lot of us, I think all of us have that voice, but a lot of us ignore it because of fear, because of outside pressures, because of cultural things. And I think it's really important because that's our internal compass, and we each have it for ourselves. And we don't get encouraged to pay attention to it very often. And so I was really lucky because in my early years making records, I got with some people who understood that and encouraged that even more. And so because of that, I've always tried to do what I'm doing from the inside out and trust that process. It hasn't always given me the most outward success, but it has kept me on a track that's kept me growing. It's kept me inspired. It's made me a living, made me plenty of money to live on. And it's helped me to feel authentic, you know, and sort of integrated. And there's a lot of value in that. You know, my dad died of cancer, and when he was really sick, and I was going home and I was visiting him, and then I would have to go back out on the road for a weekend and do my gigs and then come back, I was never so glad in my life as that moment that I had chosen something I loved to do young. So that when I was working, it didn't feel like work, it fed me. So that in the middle of this crisis, I wasn't just leaving to go arbitrarily do something. I was doing something that had meaning for me and that felt like a service to other people too.
How has that meaning changed over time?
I think it's deepened. I think I've definitely become more and more aware of the value of music in our lives, not just as solace during hard times, but really more and more as a way to make change in the world, to glue people together, to articulate things we can't put into words for our own selves sometimes. I mean, I just feel like music is a very, very powerful thing. And in fact, I just saw an interview with somebody who wrote a book about the brain, and he was saying music lives so deep, it's one of the last things after we've lost language and everything else that we'll still have music. There are people who have had strokes and can't speak, but they can still sing. And my mom died of Alzheimer's, and you know, when she didn't know me anymore, we couldn't have any conversation anymore, she could still sing all the verses to "You Are My Sunshine" with me.
Hmm.
And that was a huge lesson for me about music.
That was a song I still remember, now that you mentioned it, makes me think of an old girlfriend of mine.
Yeah, a lot of people have a reference point in their life with that song.
It's really? How does what we're talking about, what you're talking about, affect the songs that you choose? And also, I'm actually not sure the answer to this. How much songwriting do you do?
I see myself as a singer who writes. You know, I can write a decent song, and I've certainly tried to do that over the years here and there in order to contribute something of myself to my own records. But it's not, I'm not, you know, I live with a songwriter, and he has pulled to it. You know, there are times when he'll look at me and his lips start moving and there's nothing coming out, and I know he's just blank in his eyes and he is writing. A song has gotten him and he's just gone into it. And I don't have that. I have that more about singing. And what was the other question?
How do you choose the songs that you to sing?
Well, it's really a gut level thing. I mean, I try to go for a song that gets me the first time I hear it, and then I try to live with it a little bit to make sure that it holds up and and it fits with the other songs I'm choosing for a project. And you know, over the years, you learn pretty quickly which ones hold up well and which ones don't. And so it makes you, you know, the hardest thing is letting go of a good song and having faith that you'll find a great one. And the really great ones, they just don't get old.
And that can be hard to leave go of something you think is pretty good, I imagine, sometimes.
Oh, it's true. It's true. It's very hard to keep your... It's almost a matter of faith, you know? Well, if I let go of this, I mean, will I find something I like better? And, you know, you just have to try to keep tuned into that inner compass as much as you can.
When you're coming up with an album, do you have a collection of songs that you've sort of pulled together over the years and figure out, okay, I think this makes a theme, makes the album title, they all come together? I know you did that with Cole, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but in general, how do you come up with an album concept?
For me, there's a real rhythm to it. You know, I have to make a record and put it out and live with it and sort of absorb it into my experience, and then the next one will sort of come up in its own rhythm. But I can't begin the next one until I finish the process of the one that I'm on. Sometimes I'll have an idea. Sometimes I'll have found some songs and squirreled them away. In the case of this Cole album, you know, that was a whole process that had been going on for a long time. And there are many times that I have begun a record and thought it was going to be one thing, and it's sort of revealed itself to be something else. And I think that's part of it too. You know, you have to, a lot of it is what you're drawn to at that point in your life, is sort of a reflection of where you are, and you don't always see it. You know, I don't always see it until I'm done.
There was a, you know, Tommy Emmanuel, I assume.
Oh, yeah.
He was one of my early interviews for this show. We've only been doing this show for about beginning of February, and he was actually completely unfamiliar to me, and it was also end up being one of my favorite interviews, also on the telephone. And I asked him this question, and I loved where it ended up taking the conversation. So I'm just curious to know from you, what do you think makes a good song?
Boy, that's a great question. I mean, it obviously has to have a melodic element and a lyrical element. And ideally, there's this mystery to it where it's bigger than the sum of its parts. There's a song that I recorded on a Christmas album I did years ago called Mary, Did You Know? And the story of that song is fascinating to me because the song is maybe one of my all-time favorites, but I just think it's one of the closest things to a perfect song I've ever heard. And it was written by two guys, one of whom is an old friend of mine. The lyrics came to this guy named Mark Lowry, and he's kind of a comedian by trade, and this lyric, just as if he was taking dictation, just came through him one day, and he knew it was very special. So he sent it off to a friend and said, look, I've got this lyric, and I don't really write melodies. Will you write a melody to this song? So this person sent it back, and he listened to it, and he said, oh, I'm sorry, that's not the melody to this song. And to make a long story short, he did that two or three times before he finally sent it to Buddy Green. And it came in, and there is just no doubt that that is the melody to that song. It's like, you know, some part of you viscerally thinks it couldn't be anything else. But I think about what guts it took to call up and say, thank you for your contribution, but no thanks. This is too special. I mean, I just think that kind of stewardship, I'm so grateful because all of us have been blessed by his holding to what he felt in his gut about that. And that's maybe the best articulation of that mystery I can think of, because it's like it existed already. And he was trying to find it, and it was like, I'll know it when I hear it, and
right.
He did.
That's wonderful. What do you look for in texts, in the lyrics? Or does that depend on wherever you are in your own development?
Well, Usually I'm drawn to something that resonates with me on some level, you know, resonates with something that's going on in my own life. And then I have to sit with my own performance of it. Sometimes they just don't fit. They're like a shoe that looks beautiful on the shelf, but it doesn't look good on your foot, you know? Sometimes it just isn't a good fit. And sometimes your voice and a song fit together in a beautiful way, and they each sort of enhance, they each bring out the best in each other. But mostly I look for a lyric that has something to say that seems worthwhile or is poetic in a certain way, or it's really a visceral reaction in a lot of ways. It's like, you know, I look for something that's just compelling, that I either find myself thinking about it all the time, or I just want to keep playing it over and over, or I can't wait to go tell, you know, my husband or one of my friends about this song and play it for him. It's like that kind of excitement.
Well, I partly asked the question because so many of the songs do say I, and since they're written by somebody else, you must have latched on to them so that you can comfortably say, I did this, or my father did was that, or so-and-so.
Well, you know, I think the best songs are written from a very personal level and then tap into something universal so that it does remind us that a lot of times what I think is just my own individual experience is very much, in the larger sense, a part of the human experience. And there's comfort in that, you know, that I'm not alone and I'm not just a leaf floating along, you know, in isolation from everybody. And I think that's part of what music does, is it connects us and reminds us of that connection we have to each other and to something bigger than us that we can't put into words.
So you brought it right back to quantum physics.
Well, kind of, yeah. At the end of the day, it's all about the big mystery.
Yeah, isn't it, though? So talk about coal. Why coal?
I've asked myself that many times.
I mean, that's a huge question, and I know it's got, you know, enormous amount to do with your own life, so have
well,
at it.
It's been very interesting, this process. There was a big mine disaster in 2006 in West Virginia, and 13 miners were trapped for days. They thought everybody was alive, and as it turned out, all but one of them had died.
That was the Sago mine?
The Sago mine disaster. And I was riveted to that story. I would find myself weeping in front of my computer late at night reading the news reports and checking it hourly, you know, to make sure what was going on now. It was like a screensaver running in the background all the time. And I was a little bit surprised by how deeply my emotions were running during this time. Like, I thought, well, you know, I mean, my grandfathers were coal miners, but the mines had shut down by the time I was born. And so, this was part of my family's story, but I was just a little bit surprised at how touched I was by this. And it kept, even after it was over, it just stuck with me. And during the public funerals, Larry King Live covered the show. And they wanted a graceful way, I think, to get out of the show. So they called and asked if I would be willing to sing a song. And it was like 24 hours notice, so there wasn't time to go to West Virginia. But we beamed up a satellite feed, and I called a bunch of musicians, and we went down to a studio and rehearsed all day and sent this beam satellite thing up. And I realized during that process, everybody had been following the story. Everybody was glad to be able to play music. It was like, if we can ease the burden for these people, even in the tiniest way, we're there. People gave up a whole day on a Sunday to just come and do this. And I realized somewhere in that process that it was making us all feel better. We felt like we could contribute something. And I thought, you know, this is a great role of music in our lives, is like processing grief and having a place to put all that energy. And I thought, maybe I should make a record of coal mining songs. Maybe that'd be a good way to sort of get some closure on this for myself. And I've been thinking about a theme record for years that was about being from the mountains or being from West Virginia or something. And so when the coal concept came together, I thought, oh, maybe that's that record. And I just began to sort of turn it over in my mind. And when I began, I didn't know if there'd be a record at the end of the process, because I didn't know if I'd find enough good songs, and then I didn't know if I'd be able to sing them and really bring them forth, because a lot of this stuff is really raw. And I've been in commercial music for 25 years, and I just didn't want to come off like a lounge singer, you know? I just didn't want to do that. So it became a process, and, you know, took me back into old family stories. I wound up driving up the holler to find the mine where my grandfather used to work. I crashed the gate, you know, with a friend, and we're driving up on this dirt road, and, you know, it took me down in a mine, and I got to go land on a surface mine and see what that's like and hear all the family stories. And I mean, it's been life-changing.
Well, I can tell you with absolute certainty, you don't sound like a lounge singer on that album.
Thank you.
By any stretch. It's extremely moving, and it really sounds like with each of those songs, you're this is, I didn't mean this pun, but you're really digging down deep, in, you know, to the depths of your own soul.
Well, you know, one of the things Marty Stewart said to me, Marty produced this record, he said, you know, this, I was like, Marty, some of this stuff, it feels almost too easy. And he said, that's because it's in your blood, pal. This is, you were born to sing this stuff. Your family's been singing this stuff. It's in your cells. And I've really come to, I mean, I don't know if I believed that before, but I can say that I think it's part of what I experienced for sure. And the other unexpected gift in it was that, you know, in my late 40s, after making records with a lot of bells and whistles for years and all that, being in commercial music, it was a certain leap of faith to trust a very simple song in a very simple setting and just get out of its way. And not hang too many ornaments on the tree, you know, just let the tree be beautiful for itself. And there's a certain kind of trust that's counterintuitive. After you've been doing it for a while, you just think, this can't be good, it's too simple. And I got a big lesson for that, not only in the way it was sung, but the way it was produced and the structure of the songs themselves. They carry their own dignity because they're not overloaded.
And you're talking partly about the instrumentation.
Yeah, partly, and the instrumentation, the playing, I mean, every player on this is a monster, but they don't have to prove that to you. It's really, you know, Stuart Duncan's fiddle playing is a thing of wonder, but he can do it by playing one note. It's the soul in there, you know, and he trusts that and has spent, Marty's the same way. They've spent a lifetime trusting that soul to come through, and they don't have to prove it to you what a great player they are. And so therefore they get out of the way and it just comes through. There was a real lesson in that for me.
And Stuart Duncan's also your banjo player.
He plays banjo, fiddle, mandolin, has a lot of vintage instruments, and he's one of the greats, you know. He's played with lots of people in Nashville, and I was really lucky to get him on this record.
Because you don't really think of, I don't really think, usually think of banjo as a soulful instrument, but there sure was a lot of soul in what I heard out of that instrument on this album.
He just
songs.
Plays that way, you know. He's like this, he's channeling this ancient voice.
When you come to Champaign in August, you'll be bringing a lot of the songs from Cole, I assume?
We do a variety. There's a lot of stuff from Cole. And I have to say, learning to pace that into the show has been a real learning process, too. But once I did, you know, it sort of gives you a chance to sort of go to this dark place and then come back out into the light, which sort of, you know, gives the journey more depth. And I have a very tight acoustic band who are all monster players, just great players. So, you know, my bass player can bow like a classical guy, and he can slap like a rockabilly guy, and he has a great bluegrass and folk pedigree, and he's just interested in all kinds of music. And my fiddle player's from Ireland, so he brings this whole Celtic thing into it, and my guitar player Bill is just this Renaissance man, and it's a lot of music coming out of these guys.
And you're no slouch of a guitarist yourself.
I have to tell you, I have had to step up to the plate. I mean, there's a lot of times that I, you know, it's me and the bass player holding the rhythm down, and I've had to, I mean, they'll call me on it, you know, they'll just be like, you are losing it on the second verse of the such and such song, you need to pay attention. And it's really good. It's good for me as a musician.
Everybody needs to be stretched now and then.
Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation. For my end anyway, we could keep going, but because I'm enjoying talking to you very much.
Well, it's the thing I love about public radio, that it's not the 10-second soundbite. It really is a conversation, and I appreciate it so much.
Oh, can't you see that pretty little bird? Singing with all his heart and soul. He's got a blood red spot on his wing. And all the heart and soul. He's got a blood red spot on his wing. And all the rest of him. Black as coal.
Kathy Mattea from her album called Coal. That was the Red-Winged Blackbird. Kathy Mattea will be appearing at the University of Illinois Research Park tomorrow night at 7:30. Opening act is Ryan Groff, who we had earlier on the show. He starts at 6:30, and both of them appearing here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, that conversation with Kathy Mattea I had from a few weeks ago. This afternoon's going to be mostly sunny with a high temperature of 83. Tonight, clear, the low around 60. And tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 87, currently 82. This is WYLL 90.9 FM and HD Urbana. Operating translators, W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana. We're a service of Illinois Public Media. I'm Kevin Kelly.